Koizu was prime minister of the Ang. He had what he believed to be inside information that Jiang Su, converted, coveted his post and was plotting to supplant him. When Jiang Su came to visit Liang, the prime minister sent out police to arrest him. But although they searched for 3 days and nights, they could not find him. Meanwhile, Jiang presented himself to Koizu, his own court, and said, "Have you heard about the bird that lives in the sun, the phoenix that never grows old? This undying phoenix rises out of the sea and flies to the seas of the north, never alighting except on certain sacred trees. He will touch no food but the most exquisite red fruit, and he drinks only from the clearest springs. Once an owl, chewing on an already half decayed dead rat, saw the phoenix fly over. Looking up, he screeched with alarm and clutched the dead rat to himself in fear and dismay. Prime Minister, why are you so frantic, clinging to your ministry and screeching at me in dismay?"
The religious mind is basically non-ambitious. If there is any sort of ambition, then to be religious is impossible. Because only a superior man can become religious. And ambition implies inferiority. Try to understand this, because this is one of the basic laws. Without understanding it, you can go to the temples, you can go to the Himalayas, you can pray and you can meditate, but everything will be in vain. It will be simply wasting your life if you have not understood the nature of the mind, whether it is ambitious or non-ambitious. Your whole search will be futile, because ambition can never lead to the divine. Only non-ambition can become the door. Modern psychology also agrees with Chuang Tzu, with Lao Tzu, agrees with Buddha, agrees with all those who have known that inferiority creates ambition. Hence, the politicians come from the worst stuff in humanity. All politicians are sutras, untouchables. It cannot be otherwise. Because whenever the mind feels inferiority complex, it tries to become superior. The opposite is born. When you feel ugly, you try to be beautiful. If you are beautiful, then there is no effort. So look at ugly women, and you will come to know the nature of the politician. An ugly woman is always trying to hide the ugliness, always trying to be beautiful. At least the face, the painted face, the clothes, the ornaments, they all belong to the ugly. The ugliness has to be somehow overcome. And you have to create the opposite to hide it, to escape from it. A really beautiful woman will not be worried about it. She will not be even conscious about her beauty. And only an unconscious beauty is beautiful. When you become conscious, the ugliness has entered. When you feel you are inferior, when you compare yourself, and when you see that others are superior to you, what you will do? Because the ego feels hurt. You and inferior, you cannot accept it. You have to deceive yourself, others. How to deceive? There are two ways. One is to go mad. Then you can declare that you are an Alexander, a Hitler, a Nixon. Then you can declare easily. Because then you don't bother what others say. Go to the madhouses all over the world and you will find all the great persons, great, known to the history, there, already present. When Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru was alive, at least 1 dozen people in India were believing that they are Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru. Once he came to a madhouse to inaugurate some new department. And the authorities of that madhouse had arranged for a few people to be released by Pandit Nehru because they had become now healthy and normal. The first person was brought to Nehru, introduced. So Nehru introduced himself to the madman who has become now normal and said that I am Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, Prime Minister of India. The madman laughed and said, don't be worried. Be here for 3 years and you will become as normal as I have become. Because 3 years before when I came to this madhouse, this is what I believed. Pandit Jawaharlal Nehru, Prime Minister of India. But they have cured me completely. So don't be worried. This has happened in many ways. Lloyd George was Prime Minister of England. In the war days, at 6 o'clock in the evening, there used to be blackout and nobody had to move outside the houses. All traffic stopped and everybody had to go in some shelters. No light, no electricity was allowed. And Lloyd George was on his evening routine walk. He forgot. Suddenly the siren, it was 6 and his house was far away and he had to walk at least 1 mile. So he knocked the nearest door and said, the man opened and he said, let me for this night rest because otherwise the police will catch me. And I'm Lloyd George, the Prime Minister. The man suddenly grabbed him and said, come in, this is the right place for you. Because we have 3 Lloyd George already. That was the madhouse. And Lloyd George tried to convince the man. He said, don't try, because they all try to convince. You come in, otherwise I will beat you. And Lloyd George has to keep quiet for the whole night. Because he would have been beaten. Because how you can convince? Because there were already three. And they have tried all proofs. One way is to go mad, then you suddenly declare that you are the superior, the most superior. Another way is to go politician. Either go mad or go politician. Through politics, you cannot declare suddenly. You have to prove that really you are the prime minister or you are the president. So it is a long way. Madness is a short cut to capitals. Politics is a long way. But they reach to the same goal. And if the world has to be brought to be a sane, normal world, then two types of persons have to be cured, madmen and politicians. Both are ill. One has taken the long route. One has taken the shortcut. And remember well that the madman is less harmful than the politician. Because he simply declares. He never bothers to prove it. And the politician bothers to prove it. And the proof is very costly. What Hitler is trying to prove, that he is the superior most, the supreme Aryan. It would have been better for the world if he had gone mad and declared through the shortcut, then there would have been no Second World War. Politicians are more dangerous because they are madmen with proofs. They are madmen working, reaching, achieving to a goal which is just to hide the inferiority in them. Whenever somebody feels inferior, he has to prove or just simply auto-hypnotize that he is not inferior. You cannot be religious if you are mad. Mad in this sense, not mad in the sense a Saint Francis is mad. That madness comes through excess. This madness comes through inferiority. That madness of a Saint Francis or of a Chuang Tzu comes out of superiority. Comes out of the heart, comes out of the original source. This madness comes out of the ego, comes out of the inferiority. The soul is always superior and the ego is always inferior. So an egotist has to become a politician somehow or other. Whatsoever profession he chooses, through that profession he will be a politician. What I mean when I say politics, I mean the conflict between the egos, the struggle to survive. Between the egos, your ego and my ego in conflict, then we are politicians. When I am not in conflict with anybody's ego, I am a religious man. When I don't try to be superior, I'm superior. But this superiority is not against inferiority. It is absence of the feeling of inferiority. This distinction has to be remembered. There are two types of superiority. One, in which you have just hidden the inferiority, covered it. You are using a mask. Behind the mask, the inferior is there. Your superiority is just superficial. Deep down you remain inferior. And because you go on feeling that inferiority, you have to carry this mask of superiority, of beauty. Because you are alert that you are ugly, you have to manage to be beautiful. You have to exhibit. You have to have a false face. This is one type of superiority which is not real. There is another type of superiority. And that superiority is absence of inferiority, not opposite to it. You simply don't compare. When you don't compare, how you can be inferior? Look, if you are the only one on the earth and there is nobody, will you be inferior? To whom? With whom you will compare? Relative to what? If you are alone, what you will be? Inferior or superior? You will be neither. Inferior you cannot be because there is no one who is ahead of you. Superior you cannot declare because there is no one who is behind you. You will be neither superior nor inferior. And I say to you, this is the superiority of the soul. It never compares. Compare and the inferiority arises. Don't compare, you simply are. Unique. A religious man is superior in the sense that the inferiority has disappeared. A politician is superior in the sense that he has overcome inferiority. It is hidden there. It is inside. Just he is using the garb, the face, the mask of a superior man. When you compare, you have missed. Then you will always look to the other. And there are not two persons who are same. There cannot be. Every individual is unique. And every individual is superior. But this superiority is not comparable. You are superior because you cannot be anything else. Superiority is just your nature. That tree is also superior. That rock is also superior. Because the whole existence is divine. How anything can be inferior here? It is God overflowing in millions of ways. Somewhere the God has become the tree. Somewhere the God enjoys to be a rock. Somewhere the God has become a bird. Somewhere the God has become you. And only God exists, so there is no comparison. And God is superior, not to anything, because only God is. There cannot be any inferiority. A religious man comes to experience his uniqueness, comes to experience his divineness, and through his experience of divineness, he comes to realize the divineness of all. This is non-political, because there is no ambition now. You have nothing to prove. You are already proved. You have nothing to declare. You are already declared. Your very being is the proof. You are, it is enough. Nothing else is needed. Hence, remember this as the basic law. If in religion also you go on comparing, you are in politics, you are not in religion. That's why all religions have become political. They only use religious terminology hidden behind this politics. What is Islam? What is Christianity? What is Hinduism now? All political groups, political organizations, in the name of religion, doing much politics. When you come to the temple to pray, you simply pray. Are you compared? If somebody is there praying, does comparison arise to your mind? That he is doing better than you? Or you are doing better than him? Then the temple is no more there. The temple has disappeared. It has become politics. In religion, comparison is not possible. You simply pray. And prayer becomes your inner thing. It is not something outer to be compared. This incomparable prayer, incomparable meditation will lead you to the intrinsic superiority of all existence. Buddha says, don't be ambitious. Because through ambition, you will always remain inferior. Be non-ambitious and attain to your intrinsic superiority. It is intrinsic. It is nothing to be proved, achieved. You already have it. You have got it. It is already there. It has always been with you, and it will always remain with you. Your very being is superior. But you don't know what being is there. You don't know who you are. Hence so much effort in seeking the identity, in searching, in proving that you are superior to others. You don't know who you are. Once you know, then there is no problem. You are already superior. And not only that you are superior, everything is superior. The whole existence is superior without there being anything inferior. Because God is one. Existence is one. Both cannot exist, the inferior and the superior. Non-ambitious mind comes to realize this. Now we should take Chantasu's sentences and this beautiful incident which really happened. Chantasu was coming to the capital. The Prime Minister became afraid. He heard the news. Must have heard through the secret police. The CID. The Chantasu is coming. And politicians are always afraid. Because everybody is the enemy. Even the friends are enemies. One has to protect oneself from the friends also. Because they are also trying to push you down, to pull you down. Everybody is enemy. In politics, remember, nobody is a friend. Friendship is just a facet. In religion, there is none who is the enemy. In religion, there cannot be any enemy. In politics, there cannot be any friends. The Prime Minister became afraid. Chantasu is coming. And Chantasu's superiority is so that the Prime Minister thought he may try to become the Prime Minister. It is dangerous. And of course, Chantasu was superior. Not superior to anybody else. Not superior in comparison. He was simply superior. It was intrinsic. When a man like Chantasu moves, he is a king, whether he is living like a beggar or not, it doesn't make any difference. He is the king wherever he moves. Kingdom is not something external to him. It is something internal. One beggar monk from India went to America in the beginning of this century. His name was Ramdev. He used to call himself the emperor. The president of America came to see him. He looked around. He was just a beggar. The president asked, "I cannot understand. Why you go on saying yourself the emperor? You have even written a book." He has written a book, Six Orders of Emperor Ram. "Why?" "Because you live like a beggar." Ramdev laughed and he said, "Look within me. My kingdom belongs to the inner world. Look in me. I'm an emperor. My kingdom is not of this world. Because of this, Jesus was crucified. He was always talking of the kingdom. And he was always talking that I am the king. He was misunderstood. The man who was the king," he wrote, "became alert. The viceroy, Pontius Pilate, thought this man dangerous because he talks about the kingdom and the king, and he declares that I am the king of the Jews. He was misunderstood. He was talking of a different type of kingdom, which is not of this world. When he was crucified, soldiers were poking fun. They were throwing stones and shoes over Jesus. And just to mock, they had put a crown of thorns on his head with words written on them, King of the Jews. And when they were throwing stones and shoes at him, they were asking, 'Now, tell us something about the kingdom. Tell us something, you King of the Jews.' He was talking of some other kingdom, not of this world. That kingdom is not without, that kingdom is within. But whenever a man like Jesus walks, he is the emperor. He cannot help. He is not in competition with anybody. He is not hankering for any crown of this world. But wherever he moves, ambitious people will become afraid. Politicians will become afraid. This man is dangerous. Because the very face, the eyes, the way he walks, he looks like an emperor. He need not prove it. He is the proof. He did not utter it, need not say it." So when the prime minister heard through the secret police that Chuang Tzu is coming, he thought he must be coming to the capital, otherwise why? Because people come to the capital only for that. One never goes to Delhi for something else. People come to the capitals in search of ambition, in search of ego, identity. Why he should come? A fakir, a beggar. What is the need for him to come to the capital? He must be coming to take my seat, my chair. He must come to the king and will say that I am the right man. make me the prime minister, and I will put every wrong right, I will solve all problems. And the man had the glory around the charisma. The prime minister became afraid. Prime ministers are always inferior. Deep down, the inferiority complex is there, like a disease, like a worm eating the heart, always afraid of the superior. Hui Tzu was prime minister of Liang. He had what he believed to be inside information that Chuang Tzu coveted his post and was plotting to supplant him. Politicians cannot think otherwise. The first thing to be understood, nobody can think otherwise than he is. Your desires, your own ambition gives you the pattern. If you are after money, you think everybody is after money. If you are a thief, you always check again and again your pocket. That's how you show that you are a thief. Your inner desire is the language of your understanding. Politicians always think in terms of plot, conspiracy. Somebody is going to supplant. Somebody is going to throw me away. Because that's what they have done. That's what they have been doing their whole life, plotting. Politicians are conspirators. That is their language. And you look at others through your mind. You project things on others which are hidden deep in you. He thought, this Chuang Tzu is plotting to supplant me. When Chuang Tzu came to visit Liang, the prime minister sent out police to arrest him. But although they searched for 3 days and nights, they could not find him. This is beautiful. The police can find only thieves. They understand each other. The police and the mind of a thief are not different. Thieves in service of the government is the police. Their mind, their way of thinking is the same. Their masters are different. A thief is in his own service. A policeman is in the service of the state. But both are thieves. That's why policemen can catch thieves. If you send a sadhu to find a thief, he will not find. Because he will look at others through his mind. One rabbi was passing. A young man was standing, and it was a religious day, and he was smoking, and smoking was forbidden on that day. So the rabbi stopped and asked the young man, "Don't you know, young man, that this is a religious day and you should not be smoking?" The young man said, "Yes, I know that this is a religious day." Still he continued smoking. Not only that, he was throwing his smoke on the rabbi's face. The rabbi asked, "And don't you know that smoking is forbidden?" The young man said, "Yes," arrogantly, "I know it is forbidden." And he continued. The rabbi looked at the sky and said, "Father, this young man is beautiful. He may be breaking the law, but nobody can force him to lie. He's a true man." He says, "Yes, I know this is a religious day, and yes, I know it is forbidden. Remember this at the day of last judgment, that this young man could not be forced to lie. This is a beautiful young man. This is the mind of a sadhu. He cannot look at the wrong. He always looks at the right. The police could not find Chandrasu. They cannot find. They could have found him if he was an ambitious man. If he was plotting. If he was thinking in terms of politics, then he would have been caught. Because the police must have looked in places where he was not. He was a beggar. The police must not have looked. They may have crossed many times their paths. But he was a beggar, a non-ambitious man. He was not plotting. He had no mind to plot. He was like the breeze. The police searched and searched for many days, couldn't find. You can find only that which you are. You always find yourself in others, because the others are just the mirrors. If Chandrasu was to be caught, then a Lao Tzu was needed. Nobody else can catch, because how he will understand? A Buddha was needed. Buddha would have suddenly caught hold that here he is, but a policeman, impossible. If he was a thief, then it was possible. Look at the policeman, the way he is, the way he talks, the dirty, vulgar language he uses. It is even more vulgar than thieves use. A policeman has to be more vulgar, otherwise thieves will win over. I have heard one man was caught, and the magistrate asked, "Tell me, when you were caught, what this policeman said to you?" The man said, "Can I use the vulgar language also that he used in the court? Will not you feel offended?" The magistrate said, "Leave the vulgar language and say what he said." Then the man thought and said, "Then he said nothing." The police came back and they reported, "This man cannot be found. There is not such a man." They had a picture. They must have been given a picture, the identity. How this man, Chandrasu, is to be found, how is to be caught, what type of man. But Chandrasu has no identity, he has no face. Moment to moment, he is a flow, a liquidity. Moment to moment, He reflects, responds to existence. He has no fixed abode. He is homeless, faceless. He has no name. He is not a past. He is always a present. And all photographs belong to the past. It is said, and it is beautiful, and it is meaningful. Looks absurd, but it is meaningful. That whenever there is a man like Buddha, you cannot photograph him. Not that you cannot photograph him. But the moment the photograph is there, Buddha has moved. So it is always of the past and never of the present. Because you cannot catch Buddha's present face. The moment you catch it is already past. The moment you have understood, it is already gone. One of the names of Buddha is Tathagata. This word is really wonderful. This word means, just like a wind, he came and he is gone. Tathagata means, thus came like wind and thus gone. You cannot photograph a wind, a breeze. Before you have caught, it is already gone. It is no more there. Chonkazu could not be found because the police must be searching for the past and he lived in the present. He was a being, not a mind. Mind can be caught. Being cannot be caught. There are no nets. The being cannot be caught. Mind can be caught very easily. And you all are caught somewhere or other. Because you have a mind. A wife will catch it. A husband will catch it. A shop. A treasure. A post. Anything will catch you. There are nets, millions of nets. And you cannot be free unless you are free of the mind. Because you will be caught again and again. If you leave this wife, then another woman will catch you immediately. You cannot escape. You can escape this woman, but you cannot escape woman. You can escape this man, but where you will go? You have not left, then another has come in. You can leave this town, but where you will be going, another town will catch you. This desire you can leave. Another desire will become the bondage. Because mind is always in bondage. It is already caught. When you drop the mind, then the police cannot catch you. This Chonkazu was without mind. He was a mindless beggar. It means the same, the emperor. He cannot be caught. He could not be caught. When Chonkazu came to visit Liang, the prime minister sent out police to arrest him. But although they searched for 3 days and nights, they could not find him. Meanwhile, Chuan presented himself to Huitazu of his own accord and said, but then suddenly on the third day or the fourth day, Chonkazu on his own accord appeared and said, this type of man, this manner of man, Chonkazu, cannot be caught. He always appears on his own accord. It is his freedom. You cannot catch him. You can only invite him. It is his freedom to appear or not. When there is mind, you are always caught. The mind forces you. You are a prisoner. When there is no mind, you are free. You can appear, you can disappear. On your own account, it is your own freedom. If I am speaking to you, it is not that you have asked the question. It is on my own account. If I am working with you, it is not because of you. It is on my own account. When there is no mind, there is freedom. Mind is the base of all this slavery. Chuang Tzu appeared on his own account and said, and he said a beautiful parable. Listen, from the very deepest core of your heart, have you heard about the bird that lives in the south? A mythological bird. The phoenix that never grows old. A Chinese myth, but beautiful, carries much meaning. Myth is not true, but truer than any truth, because myth is a parable. It indicates something which cannot be indicated otherwise. Only through a parable, so a poetry can be said. It is a poetry. It is not a description. It indicates the truth, not an event in the outer world. It belongs to the inner. Have you heard about the bird that lives in the south? In China, India is the south. That bird lives here. It is said when Lao Tzu disappeared, he disappeared to the south. They don't know when he died. He never died. Such people never died. They simply go to the south. They disappear in India. It is said Bodhidharma came from the south. He went from India, and then after 9 years he waited for a disciple to whom he was to transmit something, the treasure of Buddha. Then he transmitted it, and it is said then he disappeared again in the south. India is the south for China. Really, India is the source of all myth. There exists not a single myth all over the world which has not arisen here. Science arose out of the Greek mind. Myth arose out of the Indian mind. And there are only two ways of looking at the world. One is science, another is religion. To look at the world, one way is science, another is religion. If you look at the world through science, it is looking at the world through analysis, mathematics, logic. Athens, the Greek mind, gave science to the world. The Socratic method, analysis, logic, doubt. Religion is totally a different pattern of looking at the world. Looking at the world through poetry, through myth, through love. Of course, it is romantic. It cannot give you facts. It will give you fictions, but I say fictions more factual than any fact. Because it gives you the innermost core. It is not concerned with the outer event. Hence, India has no history. It has only myth. Puran. No itihas. Just mythology. Ram is not a historic person. You cannot prove it. He may have been, may not have been. Nobody can say anything. Whether he was, Krishna is a myth, not a historical fact. Maybe he was, maybe he was not. But India is not bothered whether Krishna and Ram are historical. They are meaningful. They are great poetries, epics. And history is meaningless for India. Because in history, only bare facts, the innermost core never reveals. We are concerned with the innermost core, the center of the wheel. The wheel goes on moving, that is history. But the center of the wheel, which never moves, is the myth. Said Lao Tzu, have you heard about the world that lives in the south? The phoenix that never grows old. All that is born grows old. History cannot believe in this world. Because history means the beginning and the end. History means the birth and the death. The span between birth and death is history. And the span between the birthless and the deathless is myth. Ram is never born and never dies. Krishna is never born and never dies. They are always there. It is not concerned with time. It is concerned with eternity. History goes on changing. Myth always remains relevant. There is, and there cannot be a myth which ever becomes out of date. Newspaper is history. The yesterday's newspaper is already out of date. Ram is not part of the newspaper. He is not a news. He will never be out of date. He is always in the present, always meaningful, relevant. History goes on changing. Ram remains there as the center of the wheel, unmoving. Says Chuang Tzu, that lives in the south, the phoenix that never grows old. Have you seen any picture of Ram or Krishna which belongs to their old age? They are always young. Always young. Even without beard and without mustache. Have you seen any picture of Ram with beard? It must have grown. Otherwise, there was some hormonal defect. If he was really a man, and he was a man, then the beard must have grown. If Ram was historical, then the beard must have been there. But he is beardless. We have pictured him beardless. Because the moment beard grows, you have already started becoming old. Sooner or later, it will turn white. The death is coming near. And we cannot think Ram dies. So we have washed, cleaned his face completely of any sign of death. And this is not only with Ram. 24 Tirthankaras of Jain. They are all beardless, no mustache. Buddha, no mustache, no beard. All the avatars of Hindus, no beard, no mustache. Just to indicate their eternal youth. The eternity, the timelessness, the foreverness. The phoenix that never grows old. there is time. In time everything changes, and there is eternity. In eternity nothing changes. History belongs to time, myth belongs to eternity. Science belongs to time, religion belongs to the non-temporal, the eternal. In you also both exist, the time and eternity. On your surface, the wheel, the time. You were born, you will die. But this is only on the surface. You are young, you will become old. You are healthy, you will be ill. Now you are full of life, sooner or later, everything will ebb. That will penetrate. But this is only on the surface, the wheel of history. Deep down right now in you, the eternity exists, the timeless exists. There nothing grows old. The Phoenix, the South, the India, the eternal. Where nothing grows old, nothing changes. Everything is unmoving. That South is within you. That's why I go on saying India is not part of geography. It is not part of history. It is part of an inner map. It doesn't exist in Delhi. It never existed there. Politicians don't belong to it. It doesn't belong to politics. It is the inner. It exists everywhere, wherever a man comes, deep down in himself, he reaches India. That's why the eternal attraction, the magnetism of India, wherever a person becomes uneasy with his life, he moves towards India. This is just symbolic. And this movement you will not find in India. A different movement is needed. Where you start moving from the outer to the inner, the South, the land of myth and phoenix, the deathless. The phoenix that never grows old, this undying phoenix rises out of the sea and flies to the seas of the north, never alighting except on certain sacred trees. He will touch no food, but the most exquisite rare fruit, and he drinks only from the clearest springs. This soul, this innermost core of your being, never alighting except on certain sacred trees, this inner bird, this your being, it alights only on certain sacred trees. He will touch no food, but the most exquisite rare fruit, and he drinks only from the clearest springs. Once an hour, chewing an already half-decayed dead wretch, saw the phoenix fly over. Looking up, he screeched with alarm and clutched the dead wretch to himself in fear and dismay. Chuang Tzu is saying, I am the phoenix. And you are just an owl with already a dead rat chewing it. And you are alarmed that I am coming to supplant you. Your position, your power is nothing but a dead rat to me. This is no food for me. Ambition. It's not a way for life. It is only for those who are out of the debt. I have looked into ambition and I have found it useless. Once it happened, a woman came crying and weeping to a rabbi. But the rabbi was in his prayer. So she told to the secretary that go in, and even if the prayer has to be interrupted, interrupt. My husband has left me. The rabbi should pray for me so that the husband comes back. The secretary went in, interrupted the prayer. The rabbi said, don't be worried. The husband will come soon back. Sent the secretary back to the woman, don't be worried. Don't be sad. Rabbi says, your husband will come back soon. Go home and be at ease. Happy, the woman left and she said that God will give him, your rabbi, a million times more. He is so kind. But when the woman left, the secretary became sad and told to someone who was standing there that this is not going to help. The husband cannot come back. Poor woman. And she has left so happy. The bystander said, but why? Don't you believe in your rabbi and his prayer? The secretary said, of course I believe in my rabbi and I believe in his prayer, but he has seen only the petition of the woman and I have seen her face. The husband cannot come back. One who has seen the face of ambition, one who has seen the face of desire, one who has seen the face of lust will never come back to desire, to lust, to ambition. It is impossible. The face is so ugly. Shantazu has seen the face of ambition. That's why he says, your post, your power, your prime ministership is just a dead rat. Don't screech and don't get dismayed. The undying phoenix rises out of the sea and flies to the seat of the Nar, never alighting except on certain sacred trees. But the most he will touch no foot, but the most exquisite rare fruit, and he drinks only from the clearest springs. Once an owl chewing an already half-decayed dead rat saw the phoenix fly over, looking up, he screeched with alarm and clutched the dead rat to himself in fear and dismay. Prime Minister, why are you so frantic? Clinging to your ministry and screeching at me in dismay. This is the fact, but once you know, only then. Listening to a Buddha, or to a Jesus, or to a Zarathustra, you have always heard, drop desiring and bliss will be yours. But you cannot drop it because you cannot understand how bliss can happen when you drop desire. Because you have tasted only desire. It may be poisonous, but that has been your only food. You have been drinking through poisoned sources. And when someone says, stop it, you think, then I will die thirsty. because you don't know there are clear spring ponds, and you don't know there are trees with rare fruit. But you look only through your desire, then you cannot see at those fruits and those trees. When eyes are filled with desire, they look only at the dead reds. Ramakrishna used to say that there are people who cannot see anything else than the objects of their lust. This owl can sit on a high tree at the top of the tree, but he is looking only for dead reds. Whenever a dead red appears on the street, the owl becomes excited. He will not become so excited. He will not see them. If you throw a beautiful fruit, he will not see. He will not become aware. This information never reaches him because your desires work as a screen. Continuously, only that enters you which your desires allow. Your desires are just what, like a watchman is standing on the door of your being. They allow only that which appeals to them. Change this watchman. Otherwise you will live always on dead reds. You will remain an owl. And that is the misery, because deep in you the phoenix is hidden. And you are behaving like an owl. That is the discontent. That's why you can never feel at ease. That's why you can never feel blissful. You cannot feel. How a phoenix can feel blissful with a dead wretch? Always he is a stranger. Always this is not his foot. And this you have felt many times. Making love to a woman, not to a man. You have felt many times, this is not for you. The phoenix asserts, but the owl is much more noisy. The phoenix cannot be heard. The voice is very subtle, silent. It is not aggressive. In moments of peace and meditation, the phoenix says, what you are doing, this is not for you. What you are eating, this is not for you. What you are drinking, this is not for you. But the owl is very much noisy, and you have been believing in the owl for so long that you go on following it just like a habit. It has become a dead habit. You simply follow it because there is least resistance. The rut is there. You have nothing to do. You simply run on the track and go on running. Same desires, same lusts, same ambitions, and you go on running in a circle. No wonders you live in anguish. You live in a nightmare. Let the inner chanters who assert. Let the inner phoenix assert. Listen to it. It is a still small voice. You will have to calm down. You will have to put this owl to sleep. Only then you will be able to listen. This owl is the ego, the mind. The phoenix is the soul. It is born in the south, out of the sea. It is not in a part of the land, out of the vast sea. It is not out of the mud. Out of the vast sea. see, it is born. It never grows old. It never dies. It alights only on rare, holy, sacred trees. Eats only exquisite, rare fruit. Drinks only from clearest springs. Those springs are there. Those holy trees are there. You have been missing because of the owl, and the owl has become the leader. All meditation is nothing but an effort to make this owl silent so the still small voice can be heard. And then we will see what you have been doing, chewing a dead rat. Chantasu is right. The Prime Minister was unnecessary in dismay. And when you, your inner phoenix, comes to live its life, in the beginning the owl, the Prime Minister, will be in very much dismay. Your mind will create every type of hindrance for the meditation. Because the mind is afraid. The Prime Minister is afraid. This Shantazu, this meditativeness, is coming to supplant him. Your mind will catch hold of the dead rat and will scream, scared, as if somebody is going to take that food from him. In the beginning it will happen. And you have to be alert and aware. Only your awareness will help by and by. Whenever one starts meditating, mind becomes rebellious. It starts all types of arguments. What you are doing? Why wasting time? Use this time. Much can be done in it. You can achieve this and that. That desire has been waiting for so long and there has been no time and you are wasting in meditating. Forget it. And those who say that meditation is possible are deceiving. These Buddhas, these Chantasus, don't believe in them. Believe in the mind, mind says. It creates all type of doubts about everybody. It never creates any doubt about itself. I have heard one man was talking to his small child. The child has written a letter as a homework, part of homework, and he was showing it to his father. There was as many spelling mistakes as there were words, even more. So the father said, "Your spelling is awful. Why don't you look in the dictionary? When you feel in doubt, look in the dictionary." The child said, "But Dad, I never feel in doubt." This is what your mind is doing. It says to Buddha, "Dad, but I never feel in doubt." Mind never doubts itself. That is the problem. It doubts everybody. Even a Buddha, it will doubt. Even Krishna knocks at your door, it will doubt. If Jesus comes, it will doubt. It has been always so. You have been doing it continuously. You doubt me. You never doubt yourself. Because once the mind starts doubting, it is already getting out of existence. Once self-doubt arises, the base is broken. The mind has lost its confidence. Once you start doubting the mind, sooner or later you will fall into the abyss of meditation. Bach said, one mystic died. His son, his name was Hus. Was a very sleepy person, very unconscious. When Balsim was dying, he was fast asleep, and Balsim has said that this night is going to be my last. But he said, nobody can know death when it comes. He doubted. Balsim was his father, and thousands believed that he is the Messiah, the man who will lead millions to salvation. But the son doubted. He fell asleep. He was awakened in the midnight. The father was dead. Then he started crying and weeping. He has lost a great opportunity, and now there will be no possibility of meeting. But he never doubted his mind, he doubted Balsim. Then in his dismay and despair, he started crying, he closed his eyes. And for the first time, when the father was dead, then he started talking to him. Never in his life, the father has called him many times, Hus, come to me, and he will say, yes, I will come. But there are other more important things to do. This is what your mind is saying. I go on calling you, come to me. He said, there are other more important things right now. And I will come later on, wait. But death has broken the bridge. So Hus cried and started talking to his father, and he said, what should I do now? I am lost. I am in darkness. Now how I can drop this mind which deceived me, and I never doubted it, and all that I doubted you. Now it makes me very sad. Balsim appeared inside Hus and said, look at me, do the same. He went to the top of a hill, and Hus is seeing like a dream, a vision. And then from the top of the hill, Balsim dropped himself into the abyss. And he said, do like this. Said Hus, I cannot understand. Really, doubt arose again, what this man is saying, this will be suicide. Balsim laughed and he said, still you are doubting me, not doubting yourself. Then do this. In vision, a big mountain, all aflame, fire all over, as if a volcano. Rocks splitting, and the whole mountain breaking into fragments, falling into fragments. And said Balsim, I do like this. Let the mind be thrown into an abyss. I let the mind be burnt completely. And it is said, Hus said, I will think. Whenever you say, I will think, you have started doubting. Doubt thinks, not you. And when there is no doubt, faith acts, not you. Doubt thinks, faith acts. Throw doubt, you can become a great philosopher. Throw faith, you will become a chantas, a phoenix, which never grows old, which is undying. Through doubt, you can penetrate in the mysteries of time. Through faith, you will enter the door of eternity. I have heard, two men were once lost in a forest. It was very dangerous, wild animals, and the forest was so dense, and it was night, and darkness all around. A woman was a philosopher. Another man was a mystic. One man, man of doubt, another man, man of faith. Suddenly, there was a storm. Clashing of the clouds and great lightning. The philosopher looked at the sky. The mystic looked at the path. In that moment of lightning, the path was before him illuminated. The philosopher looked at the lightning. He started wondering, what is happening? And missed the path. You are lost in a forest, denser than that of this story. Night is more dark. Sometimes a lightning comes. Look at the path. A chantas is the lightning. A Buddha is the lightning. I am a lightning. Don't look at me. Look at the path. If you look at me, you have already missed, because lightning will not continue. It is only for a moment, and the moment is there when eternity penetrates the time. It is just like lightning. If you look at the lightning, if you look at a Buddha, and the Buddha is beautiful, and the face fascinates, the eyes are magnetic. If you look at the Buddha, you have missed the light. Look at the path, forget the Buddha. Look at the path. But that look happens only when there is not doubt, when there is faith, when there is not thinking, when there is not mind. Chantasu has not to be thought. Don't think about it. Just let this story penetrate in you. Forget it. Through this story, the path is illuminated. Look at the path and do something. Follow the path. Act. Not thinking will lead you, only action. Because thinking goes on in the head. It can never become the total. Only when you act, it is total. Enough for today.